This time on Weather Brains, James Spann says Old Man Winter may be planning a frigid weekend for central Alabama.
It's a case where there is brutally cold air diving down into the northern states.
What else can happen during December?
We can have a potential for as much as 8 inches of snow. That's the record snowfall for December in the last 115 years or so.
So is that Brian Peters' forecast?
No, that's not. It's climatology.
But there have been some memorable Decembers like the one J.B. Elliott recalls.
Literally hundreds of people in the Birmingham area got stranded at New Year's Eve parties and had to spend the night with their host.
Also this time, a Weather Brains Extra, unlocking Martian secrets. Was there life on the red planet?
Life could have survived on Mars 3.5 billion years ago, providing it had already originated.
A Birmingham scientist plays a key role in the ongoing exploration of Mars by two rovers. We talk with UAB Professor Tom Dowiak on what we're learning about Mars. Plus, the kind of viewer email James Spann really doesn't pay attention to.
You know, that just doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't matter.
It's all coming up. Welcome to episode number 44 of Weather Brains, the netcast that's all about weather, produced by the folks with the Weather Company in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm one of those folks, or weather geeks, David Black. Along with me is James Spann, lead meteorologist, ABC 3340. In Birmingham, Alabama. Mr. Spann, you still kicking? Make it through the Thanksgiving holiday okay?
Man, I survived as always.
Did you overeat?
Well, yeah, I did. It's kind of cool on Thanksgiving Day. I have worked every Thanksgiving for, I guess, the last 28 years, and we'll have this big family lunch, and then I come up to the TV station, and they're very generous to have big dinner catered in, so I get to do the thing at the house, you know, and then the turkey here at the station, so it's always a double-dip kind of day.
All right. Well, you were fed well. That's good. With us also this time, Brian Peters. Mr. Peters, how are you?
I am just fine, and I'm so happy to say I didn't gain any weight over Thanksgiving.
I'd like to know how you did that.
Well, it was tough. It was very tough.
Did you eat?
I ate. I just didn't overeat. I pushed away from the table at the right moment.
Man, that's pretty impressive right there. J.B. Elliott, how are you, sir? And did you manage to stay away from too much Thanksgiving trimmings and goodies?
Made it through the Thanksgiving fine with minimal eating, less than normal.
Man, you guys have got some pretty serious discipline, self-discipline going on here. That's really remarkable because Thanksgiving is the ultimate temptation to have seconds or thirds or fourths or whatever. But you guys are hanging in there.
I bet you J.B. can suck down a pumpkin pie.
Yeah, I love pumpkin pie. Well, I did have more than my share of pumpkin pie over a period of about 3 days, but on Thanksgiving Day, believe it or not, we didn't even have any turkey or turkey dressing.
Goodness.
We divided one steak between us.
Well, my wife made a pecan pie over the holidays, which I have to confess got some pretty serious attention from me, but we're not going to talk about that. But I'll go out and do some morning walks and try to work it off as we get into the holidays. It's going to be tougher, though, for the next few weeks, as you guys know. Speaking of tougher, going to be colder, it sounds like, as far as north and central Alabama weather. J.B., James, what's the situation with that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting call for Friday, David. It's a case where there is brutally cold air diving down into the northern states. And you know, as I sit here, as we're talking on a Monday night, it's about 10 below zero right now up in North Montana in Cutbank. And the question is how much of that will reach us down here in this part of the world. And the computer models don't really have the resolution, David, to handle that type of air when it gets really shallow. Out there in the fringe, the air sometimes can only be 1,000 feet deep. And I think that'll be the case in here on Friday. So at the end of the week, we're looking at the potential for some active storms Thursday night and Friday morning. And then a day Friday where temperatures probably go the wrong way. We could start about 60 and wind up in the 30s by late afternoon or evening. And up in Florence and Muscle Shoals and Sheffield, they could stay in the 30s all day up there with an icy wind. But what's funny, you know, you go south of Birmingham where we are down in places like Clanton and Alexander City and Montgomery, and they could be in the 60s all day. So, you know, Friday's going to be a day where you really have to watch that front position carefully.
What about the potential for severe weather? I think we talked in previous netcasts about the models kind of going back and forth on whether it's going to be a a real severe outbreak, and then the next run they may not suggest that as much.
Yeah, and I think we've pretty much gotten a good agreement on a scenario here. We're within 7 days, so it's not the voodoo land anymore. And initially, you know, there was some concern over a severe weather outbreak on the front side and some type of snow or ice on the backside down here with a wave possibly forming in the Gulf. But really, for both those possibilities, it sure looks like for the moment that the threat has diminished. Severe weather, I just don't think we'll have the adequate instability in here for that. And in terms of snow or ice, again, that moisture kind of moves out as the cold air moves in, that kind of deal. So I think maybe some flurries up in the northwestern corner, and that should be about it. Now, having said that, we'll probably get 6 inches of snow now.
Okay, JB, for you,
JB,
sir, for you, JB, toward the weekend, Saturday morning, if somebody has some plans for being outside, what's it going to be, shiver me timbers?
Looks like it'll be dry, maybe even clearing by that time, and temperatures in the 20s.
Wow.
25, so, 27, something like that.
So this would be potentially the coldest of the season if this happens?
It would be that. It sure would.
But it's interesting to note that the Birmingham weather records show that we can have a potential for as much as 8 inches of snow. That's the record snowfall for December in the last 115 years or so.
Now, should
is
we
that
just
a forecast, Brian?
Yeah, should we just go ahead and give
Brian's, that's not. That's climatology.
Should Brian we just give Peters Brian's phone number out to folks on the air here?
Is forecasting a major snowstorm. You heard it right here on WeatherBrain.
That's PETERS.
Yeah, at ABC3340.com. And don't send it to me. You know, I will say this: the amount of hate mail you get is staggering. Anytime there's even a remote risk of snow, ice, or cold weather, and I don't know if it's a function of just the ease of sending hate mail over the internet or a societal function where people are just griping more, but it's amazing.
Well, but, you know, for Brian to say what he said, James, don't you think, in all fairness, that mail should go toward Brian's email box instead of yours, since he was
sure
the one to say that?
He got some hate mail on the blog this weekend. That was awesome.
Hmm.
I did. I didn't see that.
Yeah, but Brian's Sunday morning post, he stirred up a hornet's nest. So
he's such an instigator.
Well, it is interesting that December 1st, in a year we all remember quite well, 1974, that we actually had 0.4 of an inch of snow in Birmingham. December the 1st, 1974.
Okay. Now, is that liquid equivalent, or is that the actual snow accumulation?
That's the actual snow accumulation.
Ah.
The equivalent was 0.04, so about
okay.
a 10-to-1 ratio. That's about right.
I got you.
So anything is possible, we know, in December, but you're saying at this point, James, that that's not a real high probability.
Well, at the moment, I'm just not overly excited about it, and I know that even some people question our forecast of temperatures falling in the 30s late in the day because they see the model guidance and it's so warm. And again, the cold air is only going to be very, very shallow, and I don't think it's got the resolution to handle that. And I'm looking at these numbers, David, and it's pretty cold up there. Right now, you pick out one of these Montana spots. Well, Cut Bank, 9 below zero, and north wind at 13 for a wind chill index of 30 below zero.
Ouch.
And you got pressures up there nearing 1,050 millibars, and I guarantee you the GFS 5 days ago didn't forecast 9 below zero for Cut Bank, and their high today was something like 5 below zero. It's just not equipped to handle. Now, it's deep cold air up there, but it also can't handle big anomalies, departures from normal. So gut feeling here is that we will turn sharply colder Friday afternoon, but the severe weather possibility looks diminished, and any snow or ice threat looks diminished. So
we really can't.
Only Brian Peters is forecasting that 8 inches of snow.
I believe that 8 inches that Brian was talking about that we had in December was that famous New Year's Eve snowstorm in 1963, wasn't it, Brian?
It certainly was, JB.
Tell us about that one, JB. You were working that one.
Yeah, I had to go in at midnight that night, but at that time I only lived about 2 miles from the airport and all on flat ground. So when I went in at 11:30 p.m., I had to circumnavigate about 25 or 30 stalled automobiles on 77th Street and the airport and highway going in. And it continued to snow the rest of the night, and by next morning, we had as much as 20 inches at Florence in that storm.
But statistically, we don't see that much snow in central Alabama, right?
Our average per winter, isn't it about 3 inches, Brian, something like that?
Yeah, I think it's about 3 inches, JB, maybe a little bit less than that. But actually, in December, there's only been 20 Decembers or 20 snowfalls recorded in December in the last, what is it, since 1895. So what is that? That's 111 years or so, 112 years. So the chances of a snowfall are pretty slim. And of those 20 snowfall events, I think about 11 of them were an inch or less. So a December snowfall is actually quite rare.
Yeah, in that December, New Year's Eve, 1963, literally hundreds of people in the Birmingham area got stranded at New Year's Eve parties and had to spend the night with their host.
Wow.
You guys probably almost hate to mention the S word sometimes for fear of knowing what it will cause.
Even if you're right, David, the hate mail is just going to flow in here. And I guess, and really, that stuff doesn't bother me that much. If people don't sign it, I don't read it. And we delete all the ones on the blog that are personal attacks or profanity. We cut some out Sunday from Brian's post because, like, one guy wrote it as though it were me. I guess out of all the stuff, you get the one that really bothers me. People will send us emails about what the Weather Channel says or what some other channel says or what some .com says or, you know, what the Three Stooges say. And, you know, that just doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't matter. You know, we're in this business to tell people what we think's going to happen. We do that our best of our ability with a blog now. We can communicate that freely and easily with these video opportunities we have, you know, the Weather Extreme videos. I'm not confined to the world of TV or 3 minutes or whatever. So what you read is just what we think is going to happen. We're not trying to, you know, make people happy by saying what somebody else is going to say. All we're trying to do is lay our heart and soul out there on the line.
And speaking of the blog, for folks who have just started listening to us here on WeatherBrains, the website, of course, is abc3340.com. Great weather site, including the blog and all of the other weather features that James and crew put together and keep up to date, by the way, when things are really happening. When we talk about the weather, we're certainly referring, of course, to what we experience here on the good old Earth, but climate is being studied carefully for its possible role in the presence of life elsewhere in the universe. In a Weather Brains Extra, Unlocking Martian Secrets, we learn why scientists are paying more and more attention to what happened on Mars about 4 billion years ago. That's a time when researchers say water, a precursor to life, was present on Mars. 9 years ago, 21 scientists proposed landing instrument-equipped rovers on the Martian surface. Well, that idea led to Spirit and Opportunity. You've heard of those names. Those are the two rovers now exploring the surface of Mars in what has become a crown jewel among NASA's missions. One of the 21 scientists behind that project lives here in Birmingham, UAB Professor Emeritus Tom Dowiak, who maintains an active role in monitoring what the rovers are finding on Mars. From his Red Mountain home in Birmingham, Dowiak looks over new data coming in from the rovers every day. He says Spirit and Opportunity are getting some help in their work on Mars from the weather.
I've been a NASA research scientist now for a number of years, and I have broad intellectual interests. I'm interested in the origin of life. I've done research into the origin of life on Earth, and that's a cosmic question. Life originates because of cosmic circumstances. The Earth came into existence along with the Sun 4.5 billion years ago. Life came into existence at least 3.5 billion years ago, if not earlier. We have landed at places on Mars that are at least 3.5 billion years old. That's the same age as the oldest samples that we have on Earth. Most of Mars, a good part of Mars is 3.5 billion years old or older. So we've gone there to look at what the conditions were like on Mars 3.5 billion years ago and to try to figure out whether or not life could have survived on Mars if it came into existence. And the answer that we've come up with, and we published this very recently, that if life did originate on Mars and was there 3.5 billion years ago, it could have survived at that time, but then probably would have, you know, in terms of it progressing further on to the present time, that would have been rather difficult. But life could have survived on Mars 3.5 billion years ago, providing it had already originated. Now, the history of Mars, this is a question of climate of another world. Mars today, and for the last 3.5 billion years, has been an ultimate desert. There's no precipitatable water.
What's a typical weather day like on Mars?
Cold. It'll reach up to about freezing if you're in the equatorial areas. And then at nighttime, it drops about 100 C below that. So it fluctuates roughly between, say, 180 above absolute zero and 270 above absolute zero. That's in Kelvin. Room temperature on Earth, the planetary temperature Earth, is about 300 above absolute zero. Mars doesn't get up to 300, but it can get up to actually above the freezing point of water, where water, which is 273 above absolute zero. But for the last 3.5 billion years, Mars has been a desert. The water that exists on Mars freezes out at the polar caps in a seasonal way. It can also frost up on the ground at nighttime. We knew this as far back as 1976, when the Viking spacecrafts, the two Vikings, landed on Mars. There were images that showed one morning frost on the ground. But 3.5 billion years ago to about 4 billion years ago, Mars had liquid water. But the conditions then were such that there was a lot of volcanic activity, and the volcanic activity rendered Mars a rather acidic place. There's a lot we have found in the rocks that are 3.5 billion years old on Mars, that there's a lot of sulfur. There's sulfates. For example, gypsum, you know, the stuff you make a wallboard out of, is calcium sulfate. We can specifically say that there are iron sulfates there. We can identify them. And these are minerals, the iron sulfates are minerals that would probably form in water. We have found also on Mars the mineral hematite. Hematite is the stuff of Red Mountain. The reason why Birmingham is here, it's an iron ore, and it's formed in water. We have also found another mineral on Mars called gertite, which definitely is formed in water.
So you really want to know about water's history on Mars.
Yes, we've been following the water. We've been searching for evidence of water, and we find that 3.5 billion years ago, there was water on Mars. And at times, episodically, it was liquid. Now, prior to that time, we think that Mars perhaps was not acidic. In the first 0.5 billion years of Martian history, from 4.5 to 3 billion years on Mars, we think that Mars may have been either in terms of, it may have been neutral or alkaline in its chemistry. And then about 4 billion years ago to 3.5 billion years ago, that chemistry changed from being neutral or alkaline to becoming acidic. Now, life can live in acidic environments. You can go to Yellowstone National Park and find acidic hot springs there, and you can find alkaline hot springs there. And you can find life existing, bacterial life, that are known as archaea. These are single-cell organisms that do not have a nucleus, such as the kind of cells that make up plants and animals. But the bacteria and archaea in Yellowstone National Park live in environments which are quite acidic or quite alkaline.
So how did you get connected with Spirit and Opportunity?
I have, over the years, have looked for at the kinds of instruments that we could bring to bear in the search for fossils on Mars, particularly the minerals that lead to fossils. And I was involved in developing of a couple of instruments over the years with NASA. One of these types of instruments, called a MERS biospectrometer, ended up on both of the rovers. The instrument was delivered by scientists from Germany. But I became part of the Mersbauer team, and it's an instrument that uses nuclear radiation to interrogate iron-containing minerals as to their nature. You know, what mineral is there? And that's how we know the mineral hematite exists on Mars, and the mineral gertite exists on Mars, the mineral jarosite exists on Mars. These are iron-containing minerals that are formed in water. And we find rather extensive deposits. So that means the water was probably quite extensive. How long the water was in a liquid state, we don't know, except we think it was probably episodic.
And what happened to it?
Well, eventually it dried away. Mars lost its atmosphere a long time ago. Mars does not have a magnetic field like the Earth has. The Earth still has a magnetic field that's being continuously generated deep inside the Earth in the vicinity of the core. That stopped on Mars probably 3.5 to 4 billion years ago.
What would cause that?
Well, Mars is a smaller world, and because it's a smaller world, it lost its energy quicker, its thermal energy. The core cooled down on Mars, And unlike the Earth, and Mars does not have a molten core. And if you don't have a molten core, you can't generate electric currents and as a consequence, a magnetic field. The Earth has got an electrical conductor deep inside its core. It's rotating. And this allows a magnetic field to come into, well, electric currents develop in the core, which cause a magnetic field to appear about the Earth. Now, the magnetic field does something. It shields the Earth from the sun. You know, we think in terms of sunlight coming from the sun, but most people don't realize that the sun blows out a wind. Not a very powerful wind. I mean, if you put your hand up in a spacesuit, you would never feel it. But it's there. It's the wind that blows out the tails of comets. But this wind, over billions of years, can blow away an atmosphere. In the case of Mars, it blew the atmosphere of Mars away in less than a billion years because the magnetic field on Mars disappeared. The solar wind blew it away, and Mars lost its atmosphere.
Spirit and Opportunity both landed in, I believe, January of 2004.
Yes.
They were not expected to operate as long as they have, were they?
It's not a matter of expected. It's a matter of what the contract is, the deliverable the contract is. In other words, NASA had a contract with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory to build these rovers such that they would last at least 90 days, 90 Earth days. In order to honor the contract, they would try to build a rover that would last 90 days. They far exceeded that.
Well, they're both still operating.
Yes, they're still operating as of looking at my computer a little while ago.
How long is it feasible to expect them to continue?
Well, it's like an automobile. How long do you expect your car to operate? Now, there's a difference on Mars, is that we can't do preventive maintenance. Also, the conditions on Mars are a lot harsher. At the warmest on Mars, it goes from the temperature which water freezes down to a temperature below that of Antarctica in just 12 hours.
So that has to be tough on the equipment.
Yeah, so over 24 hours, it goes from basically a cold day on Earth to colder than Antarctica. There's it's a daily cycle. That's about 180 degrees Fahrenheit in a 24-hour period. Now, metals expand and contract when they heat up and when they cool down. And if you expand and contract a piece of metal long enough, the atoms that make up the crystalline structure gradually move out of place, and it breaks. Now, that's already happened with one of the motors on one of the rovers. The motors are made in Switzerland. They're DC motors. One of the wires in one of the motors has broken. That rover is running on five wheels instead of six. It drags one of the wheels. Another thing is also these motors have brushes in them. Well, there's no one on Mars to replace the brushes on these Swiss-made motors. So eventually the brushes will wear out.
Bottom line is, though, we've gotten a tremendous payoff for the investment.
We've gotten a tremendous amount of experience operating these things on Mars. We've gotten a lot of images. We've gotten a lot of scientific data. And what's happened is it's allowed us to prepare very strongly for the next mission. The United States is going to be launching another rover mission in 2011. The Europeans are also going to be launching a rover mission in 2011. The Russians want to do it. And the Chinese have talked about it as well. So we now have a pretty good idea of what it is, what it takes to operate on Mars. It's actually turned out to be easier than we thought. Our rovers are solar powered. And one of the things about the 90 days, we thought that the solar panels would get dusted up. Well, the winds on Mars, the weather on Mars, blows away the dust. In terms of the Spirit rover, there are actually dust devils that are going up and down the area where Spirit is, and these dust devils have actually even passed over the rover, the Spirit rover, and blown its solar panels clean, brought the power up. At one point, the Spirit rover actually had more power than when it landed.
So wait a minute here. Earth is not the only place where a dust devil occurs?
No, we've landed in the dust devil alley of Mars, Gusev Crater, which is a meteor crater about the size of it's an asteroid crater. It's an asteroid hit there 4 billion years ago, created a crater about a third of the size of Alabama. We landed down in the middle of that crater. From orbit, we can see, we knew there were a lot of dust devils. We can see these dust devil trails across the surface. The rover has photographed these dust devils on many occasions. It's just that the wind currents in this large crater have been conducive to having a lot of dust devils.
How big would these dust devils be? Any idea?
Oh, they get maybe about 10, 20, 30 meters across. That makes them 30 to 90 feet across. They can extend up, quite high. They're all sizes. If you've ever seen a dust devil in the desert, they can be, on Earth, they can be rather high. On Mars, some of these dust devils are pretty spectacular.
So this is just weather on Mars?
Well, it's wind currents. And what happens is the wind is blowing across the terrain. It's turbulent. It starts to rotate. And then what happens is the rotation collapses, just like in a tornado, and it speeds up.
So despite the thin atmosphere, there is enough wind flow to cause this?
Oh, yes, yes. We had to worry about the landing sites on Mars were picked such that in the landing time early in the morning were picked to keep the wind down to a minimum. Where we were landing winds, not to keep the wind down to a minimum, where we would experience the minimum amount of wind.
Do you continue to follow what Spirit and Opportunity are doing?
Oh, every day. Yes, I'm linked up. I'm still a member of the team. We're doing this exploration over the Internet. The data comes down on a daily basis. I've got a computer with a 500 gigabyte hard drive on it to store the data. I've got two large screens to view the images in high definition.
So every day is kind of a treat for you, isn't it?
Every day we're exploring Mars. Now, recently, Mars has been on the opposite side of the Sun. We call that conjunction in its orbit, or relative to where the Earth is in its orbit. And the other thing that's also happened is that the Spirit rover, which is 15 degrees south of the equator, has been in the Martian southern hemisphere winter and has been in cold storage on the north side of a hill such that its solar panels were tilted towards the north, towards the Sun. We had it sitting up there in storage. The Opportunity rover has been operating in the vicinity of the equator, so there hasn't been a winter problem as much there as there has been for the Spirit rover. But the Spirit rover is now up and operating. It's being moved from its winter hibernation position. While Spirit was in hibernation, the Opportunity rover was traveling across the surface of Mars in a place called Meridiani Planum, which is near the equator. It's covered with little tiny BB-sized pieces of hematite, the iron Fe-203, rust, made in water, and it's now on the rim of a meteor crater, Victoria Crater, which is a little bit smaller than the meteor crater in near Winslow, Arizona. On the way there, though, we visited a meteor crater called Endeavor Crater, which was smaller, and actually went down to the center, down towards the center of that crater, and came back out. An Opportunity actually, upon landing, rolled into a meteor crater about 30 feet across, 30, 40, 50 feet across. And that was explored for several months before we came out of that, and then went across the surface of Mars, past a crater called Bonneville, went into Endeavor Crater, and then came out of that, and then we trekked a long distance across a desert. The images were like looking at the ocean. You just saw, instead of seeing waves, you saw sand ripples. The rover got even caught in the sand for several weeks, but got out. And now we're scouting the rim of this Victoria Crater in preparation to probably go down somewhat into the crater at a place where that may be possible.
When you get stuck in the sand, how long does it take to send a command and then wait to see what happened?
This is done on a daily basis. The rover is told what we want it to do. And the rover then, the signal has to go up from one of three stations that are on the Earth, one in California, one in Spain, and one in Australia, that are, where Mars is always in view, except when it's on the other side of the Sun. And then the signal goes either directly to the rover, or it goes to one of the satellites that is orbiting Mars. You may have heard recently one of the satellites just went dead. Mars Global Surveyor, which has been operating for 10 years, it served as a communication satellite. But we have another satellite there, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which we put into orbit to serve as the principal communication satellite of the rover. The signal can either go straight down to the rover, or else it can go to the satellite, and then when the satellite is overhead in its orbit above the rover, it can send the signal down to the rover.
But how much time actually has to pass between when a signal is transmitted from Earth and is received by the rover?
If you get a direct transmission, it's on the order of a half hour, roughly, plus or minus, depending on, you know, where Earth is in its orbit and where Mars is. What basically happens is that we set a signal up, and then we wait about 24 hours, and we get a reply.
NASA is working very hard toward getting us back to the moon and beyond with development of the Ares program. I know you're following that. Are you optimistic that we're getting closer to one day walking on Mars?
I'm in no hurry for us to go to Mars. It's an incredibly dangerous place. The journey is incredibly dangerous. We have got to know an awful lot before we go to Mars. We've got to have some technologies that we do not have before we go to Mars. We could go to Mars, but we would put a human crew at risk. All we need is an explosion on the sun, and that crew is wiped out from radiation just as fast as that former Russian spy in Great Britain was. That can also happen on the surface of the moon. We could perhaps forecast the activity on the sun with enough reliability that we can plan our missions back and forth to the moon, because the journey time is relatively short. And if we have to yank anybody off the moon, they can be back within the magnetic field of the Earth, the magnetic shield of the Earth, within several days.
But Mars is a totally different situation.
You can't. I mean, it takes you at least 7 months to go to Mars with the kind of propulsion systems that we have now. The only way that we can safely go to Mars is if we have nuclear propulsion. And nuclear propulsion is going to have to wait until safe nuclear energy is developed for the Earth. The question is how safe is it? It's probably, we're probably at a tipping point in terms of a nuclear power on the Earth, that we're probably starting to make it at a safety, you know, being able to generate it at a safety level that we should have been doing 20, 30 years ago when we had Chernobyl and Three Mile Island. When we become more comfortable with the generating of nuclear energy in the Earth, then we'll be able to, start thinking about using nuclear generation of energy for space flight.
That's UAB Professor Emeritus Tom Dowiak. The Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter has taken some spectacular high-resolution pictures of the red planet. You can see those on the Internet. Those pictures show features of the Martian surface in very close detail, shot from as close as just over 100 miles. Amazing stuff. Dust Devils on Mars, James. You guys going to be ready to keep the blog updated for that when that day comes?
Well, I think we ought to send Peters up there in a storm van and do a live shot with that.
With only enough fuel to make a one-way trip, right?
Yeah. Of course, you know, knowing Brian, he'll somehow be able to steal Wi-Fi up there.
Absolutely.
Well, it's a pretty fascinating subject, and it amazes me to realize how much we have learned over the years from the research that has been done by NASA. And also, we've had NASA folks, Steve Cook, on previous netcasts talking about NASA's Reach for the Stars, the next generation rocket program. And as exciting as that is, it's kind of sobering to me anyway to hear people like Tom Dowiak talking about the incredible danger and his hesitation just to jump right on and head off to Mars. It really makes me appreciate the complexity and the risks involved in making something like that happen.
And he said he was concerned about some type of solar flare or explosion on the sun endangering the crew. I wonder if it'd be the same on Mars or on the moon when they went up there in the 60s and early 70s.
It's a fascinating and complicated field, that is for sure.
And I think we should point out that guy's in Alabama. A lot of people listen to this probably think we don't have running water down here. I mean, that is a genuine space scientist right here where we are.
He's been deeply involved in astrophysics, astronomy, various types of physics for many years. James, when I worked with you in television at Channel 13, I remember, and this was 20 years ago, I remember interviewing Tom Dowiak then about astronomy stories. So he's got a lot of years, a lot of knowledge built up in the business.
Yeah.
If you'd like to contact us here at WeatherBrains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail for us, our number is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482. A reminder that the opinions you hear expressed here on the Netcast are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. On behalf of James Spann, J.B. Elliott, and Brian Peters, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening and hope you will be able to join us for the next WeatherBrains Netcast. WeatherBrains is copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios! You guys heading to Mars? Just heading off to
work?
Not
anytime soon.
Yeah, I'll wait to get that nuclear power deal going, so it won't take as long.
Be too long in the storm chaser to send Peters anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, especially if I obey the speed limit.
Well, and if JB went with you, you guys might want to stop and get some donut. Well, I'm not going to say that. Never mind.
We need to do one segment on the fact they've closed Wesley's booby trap. What a tragedy for Brian.
Oh, my goodness.
They put some kind of one of those gambling deals in there, sweepstakes, whatever they call them. No more Wesley's.
What's the world
Wesley's coming? Arcade.
What's the world coming to?
I don't know.
All right, guys. Enjoyed it.
All right. See you, boys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.